There's no other way to put it. The news out of Gaza is depressing. More Israeli air and naval strikes, more rockets lobbed by Palestinians back at Israel, more deaths. 9 days of fighting have left some 213 Palestinians and one Israeli dead. How to get at this story? To be honest, we struggle with it, and we figure you might feel the same way. So today we're going back to basics. What is the Gaza Strip, and how did we get here? Robert Bletcher with the International Crisis Group helps explain.
It's about 25 miles long, between 3 and 7 miles wide at different points. In total, it's about twice the size of Washington, D.C.
So that's incredibly small with a lot of people. How did it come about?
Yeah, it is incredibly small. The population density there, it has, you know, one of the highest, if not the highest, population densities in the world. Gaza was an integral part of the historic territory of Palestine until the 1948-1949 war, when Israel was created and about 700,000 Palestinians were displaced. After the end of that war, the Gaza Strip ended up under the control of Egypt. The West Bank ended up under the control of Jordan. And so you had the emergence of a separate identity for Gaza that was Palestinian, but yet was connected to Egypt.
So was there a population who lived there,
yes,
who were already there, and then a whole bunch of Palestinians entered there around 48-49?
Exactly. And in fact, right, the majority of the Palestinian population of Gaza now are refugees.
So after the 1940s, after Israel becomes a state, is there continuous kind of migration by Palestinians into the Gaza Strip up to the present?
After Israel was formed in the late 1940s, until 1967, those two territories, Gaza and the West Bank, were two separate territories. In 1967, when Israel conquered both Gaza and the West Bank, those territories were reunited again under Israeli occupation. And there was relative freedom of movement back and forth between Gaza and the West Bank for Palestinians. That state of play lasted until the early 90s, when, as a result of the First Intifada, Israel started imposing restrictions on the movement of Palestinians between the West Bank and Gaza for security reasons. Those restrictions multiplied over the course of the 90s until the Second Intifada, which started in 2000, when those restrictions became much more draconian. Once you got to 2007 and Hamas took over Gaza, there was a formal split at that point between Palestinian governance in Gaza and Palestinian governance in the West Bank. And that's how it has remained ever since.
So you've spent a fair amount of time in Gaza over the years. What's it like? Describe it for us.
It's a crowded place. Most of the architecture is low. There's not a lot of big, tall buildings. Gaza City is dominated by the beach because the Gaza Strip is on the coast. And historically, Gaza has been a vacation spot for rulers around the Middle East who would come there in the summertime. It was also a vacation spot for Gulf Arabs who wanted to find a cooler spot to enjoy during the summer. Obviously, those days have long passed.
Do you have a favorite place in the Gaza Strip?
In Gaza, the beach really is or was incredibly beautiful. Hamas has tried to do a lot of work in the past few years to impart a sense of normalcy by cleaning the beach and restoring the beach. Unfortunately, because of the severe infrastructure problems, the problems with sewage, the problems with water, the beach is just not such a nice place anymore. But still, when you sit there and gaze out at the horizon, if you can forget about the problems that you're standing in the midst of, it still is quite beautiful.
Is there a particular person or story that you remember from Gaza that's kind of emblematic of the whole situation?
I have a colleague, a very, very close colleague there who I've been in touch with throughout all of this fighting. For the first time in over 20 years, he had the opportunity to come to Jerusalem a few weeks ago. And I saw him there and I was chatting about his life there and I was chatting about his family. And I was sitting there as he Skyped with his daughter back in Gaza. And he was asking about how things were going in Gaza. She was very interested in what's happening in Jerusalem. It's a place that she had never been and a place she would never be able to, she probably will never be able to go. But what was interesting to her was not the historic sites that he had seen during the day. We had gone to the Holy Esplanade, the Temple Mount and the Haram al-Sharif. We had seen all of these beautiful things. But his 6- or 7-year-old daughter, what she wanted to talk about was, so they have internet all the time there? They have electricity all the time there? That for her, it was just electricity that was the amazing thing that he was experiencing. And meanwhile, you know, he's in Jerusalem, you know, the crucible of three monotheistic religions. And that was not even on her agenda. You know, it was just the electricity. That was it.
What you're saying suggests that one of the biggest issues for Gaza is the isolation and the inability for people to get out and this sense of sort of gradual deterioration. How hard is it for Palestinians to leave Gaza, either for a trip or permanently?
Oh, for the vast majority of the population right now, impossible. Ever since Mohamed Morsi was deposed in July of 2013 and the new regime, now with President Sisi, took over Egypt, Rafah, which is the southern
pedestrian exit points,
was closed. It opens once every maybe 45 days, 50 days for a limited number of medical cases to get out. Even all the urgent medical cases cannot get out. And there's a whole bribery system now where people who are in desperate need of medical care pay $2,000, $3,000 just to get their name to the head of the line. But nobody else can get in and out.
Having spent so much time looking at this from top to bottom, what do you come away from when you get up in the morning and turn on the radio and hear another story about violence in Gaza, violence between Arabs and Israelis, this back and forth war going on? What do you feel like you know that most of us don't?
To be in a war right now where such enormous amounts of ordnance are being dropped on Gaza, people feeling like death is around the corner just at any moment because a bomb could fall on them, to see that those people also largely support what Hamas is doing, support the firing of rockets, indiscriminate rockets into Israel that could land anywhere on civilians and kill, you know, God knows how many people there. The amount of desperation that people feel, like they have no other choice, that they are not willing to go back to a situation where they're deprived of all the basic necessities of life and that they are willing to cower in their kitchens as their houses are raked by gunfire from offshore Navy boats, which is, I just talked to somebody last night who was speaking to me from his kitchen as his building was being hit by gunfire. It's very difficult to connect to that sense of desperation. We hear so many stories from all around the world of people who are truly desperate that we all become inured to that. And I think by virtue of my time there, I've developed a set of relationships which has broken through my own sense of cynicism about this, and it's made it very difficult for me to ignore.
Rob Bletcher is the acting director of the Middle East and North Africa program at the International Crisis Group. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
So a lot to chew on there, but did we answer all your questions about Gaza? If you have more, head over to Facebook, where Rob Bletcher continues to answer your questions at facebook.com/PRI the world.